morning, everybody. Here we are, live, or not live, but almost live, back with the Bass University at the 50th Bassmaster Classic. I am Pat Renwick, the Dean Pete Glusick, and ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to go ahead and say it, the legend.
Oh, come on.
The legend, Bernie Schultz, joins Bass University this morning.
Don't do that.
50th Bassmaster. I did it. I did it, Bernie. No, I did it. I did it. It's great to have you, dude.
Yeah, man. It's been a while.
Yeah,
dude, glad to see both of you guys. Yeah.
It's great to have you. We fished out on tour for quite a few years.
We did.
I started back in 1997. When did you get your career started?
Oh, man, in the 80s, actually.
80s?
Yeah, in the late 80s. Fished a few tournaments in Florida,
mm-hmm.
but didn't really jump on the tour until 87.
So, wow.
Yeah.
Man.
It goes back.
That's why you're a legend.
Yeah, it is. That's legendary status, dude. That's
being old.
Don't
legend,
you argue
man.
With me, Bernie Schultz.
That's all it takes.
That's staying power, brother. That's being able to hang with the best in the world, best in the land for
35 years.
Wow.
Like that.
Good mathing.
Yeah.
Whoo. That's impressive. But you've always been kind to me out on tour. I appreciate that even when I was a new kid. And, we've been friendly out on tour for a while. I wish I was out there with you, but you're enjoying things out on tour right now.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
the Elite Series. Yeah,
it's got to be great to still be battling. I know there's been some topsy turvy things, but it seems like the elites are alive and well and doing better than ever.
So absolutely, yeah. This sport's going to survive regardless of the curves it gets thrown at it. Everybody's still talking about the exodus. A lot of the guys left Bass to go to MLF. But that's not new. That happened back years ago when FLW announced their tour.
That's right.
And it made it better for the anglers. And everybody found a home, and the sponsors found their niches, and things moved on.
Right.
So
is it true that the Bassmasters are better than the MLF?
I'm not going there. For me, they are.
That's what the shirt under your jersey says.
Yeah, for me, they are.
Well, that's great. Well, talking about all this history, and this is one of the reasons why we brought you here, because you've got history, and we're going to talk about a bait that has a lot of history. It is it has a personal spot in my heart, because I actually caught the very first bass that I ever tried to catch on a lure. Like, to me, it was random when I first got started fishing. You just go fish and try to catch whatever you can catch. I think a lot of people started that way. But I bought myself a Rapala floating minnow with intent to go out and catch a bass in the spring, and I actually caught a 2.5-pound bass on it.
That was your first.
Dude, that's a good one,
Pete. Was screaming across the pond like I was the first person ever to catch a bass on a lure. It was monumental.
You
changed.
Did it.
That's, it changed
that's
everything
me.
For
that's
me.
That's me in any elite tournament these days. No, man, I think a lot of people could share that same story. I think an original floater was probably could account for a lot of first fish for people worldwide.
Right.
Yeah.
Just the mystic nature of that bait, man. I mean, even my grandpa telling me stories of that lure, like, Pat, we used to have to go to the tackle store and we'd rent them for $25 a day, and it took me a week to make $25 back then.
That's right.
I mean, is that stuff true?
That is a true story.
That stuff happened.
In the very beginning, only a few were brought over, and it was in Minnesota where it all started. And that is now the headquarters of Rapala worldwide, as you know. And anyway, it is a true story. There was one dealer that had just a few of them, and he leased them out with a hefty deposit.
Wow.
So,
wow.
True story.
Before credit cards.
It's the number one artificial lure sells, worldwide.
Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Continues to this day.
Still is,
interesting.
Yeah. It's crazy. Just a balsa stick, basically, that looks like a minnow.
And it does. It looks just like a minnow, and, of course, we'll have an image we're going to be talking behind, so people will get to see exactly what we're talking about, and that's what it is. It's the original balsa lure. Do you know the history of it? Was it designed overseas or?
Lori Rapala. It was his first effort. He Finnish guy who's fishing, is sustenance fishing for him. He was trying to feed his family. He wasn't trying to sell lures. He was trying to feed his family, and he was making lures because they didn't have anything. He didn't have money. He was a farmer and a fisherman, and just basically living off the land or the lake. And he carved the first lures. People around him found out about him and his success. And one thing led to another, and I would suggest anybody that's listening, go to Bassmaster.com and look up my column, and there's a pretty good story on Lori Rapala and the original floater minnow.
It's an amazing article.
Yeah, the name of it's The First Jerkbait.
Right,
which,
right.
You know, the whole history of jerkbaits evolved from that, that first effort by Lori Rapala.
And it's unique now. It seems like everything is going the way of suspending jerkbaits, and there's been a lot of evolution of the bait, you know, since then. But let's talk about that next. Let's talk about this bait. This bait, I think, is well suited. You're from Florida. It's well suited for Florida. It stays above the grass.
It does.
It allows you to work in really, really shallow stuff. Yeah. Tell us, teach us and the Bass University guys about where you're going to throw this bait, how you're going to trigger the strikes, how you catch fish with this tool.
Man, it works in so many different situations. In Florida, like you said, it works really well in a shallow water column, which a lot of times that equates to fishing over grass, you know, shallow grass flats and throwing in holes or along the contour edges, whether you're on the inside edge or the outside edge. It's a really effective tool, and it has the ability to pull fish to the surface, or sometimes you work it just below the surface and they'll attack it. But it works a lot of places. I mean, you can catch them on riprap banks and around cypress trees and lily pad fields and docks. I mean, it really doesn't have any limitations as far as the type of cover or the situation that you're looking at. It's more about, are the fish positioned in those areas where they would respond to a surface presentation?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, is this a real tournament tool?
Absolutely.
Like, guys got all
good
the
question.
New stuff, you know.
Yep.
This is old school lure. Is this really something we need in our tournament tackle box?
For me, I mean, I'm old school. I've been at the game a long time. To me, it's an essential tool. I can tell you, I came very close to winning on Okeechobee some years ago. Terry Scroggins beat me flipping, but I had him going, and I had the fish on to win. It's not a high percentage lure when you're using lighter line and, you know, thick vegetation, and I lost some as a result of that. But it was the best lure to get the bites. So I was playing a percentage game, and I came up short. I lost a really big fish on the last day. But, yes.
Was that the same tournament where you accidentally cut yourself,
too?
It is the same.
Yeah, it was stupid.
tell me that.
I retied the lure, which I had to do a lot because, you know, every time I caught a fish, I had to retie. I was using light line. I was fishing boat trails through the vegetation.
Yep.
The fish were using those boat trails as like a highway. I was making long casts ahead. Well, anyway, I caught a fish and I retied. And when I was trimming the tag ends of the line, I clipped my finger and I hit apparently an artery because blood went.
It was everywhere. Man. Oh my God, Bert! It was like a horror movie.
It was kind of ugly, but it didn't take me out of the game, but it definitely slowed me down. So
it was that. Was that scent?
Man,
is that?
I remember that one.
Yeah.
Was that illegal scent that you were?
You're chumming.
Yeah, I was chumming at that point. Yeah. All I had in the boat was electrician's tape.
So. Oh, that was awesome.
Yeah,
that
works.
You kept going, dude. You were a champ.
I was trying, but anyway, to answer the question, I believe it's definitely viable today, even. And there are situations. What I like about that bait so much is it'll catch fish when other baits won't. It's a subtle presentation. If you've got the patience, whether you're fishing a bare bank or around cover, if you've got the patience and the water clarity is reasonably good, that bait will provoke a fish when others won't.
Now, is it seasonal? Are you going to be using it out here in the cold water like at Gunnersville?
I would not. Now, the option you would have on that is you could weight the bait, which a lot of guys in Missouri, that's where the evolution of suspending jerkbaits started, was with an original floater, and they would weight the bait. The guys drilled the bellies, or they put weight around the shank of the first, like the lead hook, and put enough weight on there to get the bait to stay down when they jerked it down. And in Missouri and those Midwest reservoirs where there's clarity in the wintertime, it's a killer bait still today. You know, we got a lot of jerkbaits to choose from now, but back in the day, that was it.
And that was a science.
It was a science.
I mean, between wrapping wire on the hooks, Bernie, or suspend dots, or even gluing lead.
That's exactly right.
I mean, people, like, spent hours, days, years.
That's right.
Perfecting it.
That's right.
It's crazy.
Yep. The Hibdens could speak to that. Randy Blockett.
Absolutely,
you know,
Randy.
Anybody from Missouri or maybe Northern Arkansas and Oklahoma, they were in on that right from the start.
Right.
And look what happened since then.
Oh, since then it's dramatically changed, and we're going to talk about that in a second. When you're casting this thing in the shallow water, doing like you did in Florida, you've got a light bait. right? So you've got to use specialized equipment to be throwing this bait. Talk to me a little bit about the rod, the reel, the line, how you're working this tool.
Yeah, usually no less than a 6'6", preferably a 7-foot length rod, medium action. You need a little forgiveness for not only casting but for playing fish.
Mm-hmm.
You're using generally lighter line. I mean, that was the downside to my deal on Okeechobee, mm-hmm. is I had to use light enough line to where I could make a lengthy cast, because the fish, they didn't respond close quarters.
Right.
I had to make long casts. The water was very shallow, and they were big fish, some of them. You know, I caught several big ones doing that. So to do that, to achieve that, you have to have light line.
Mm-hmm.
And so 10, 12, 14 would be on the heavier side. Unless you're using a bigger bait and you're on big fish and heavy cover, I would maybe go up to 15 to 17 even.
What size Rapala, sorry to interrupt you, what size Rapala was that on that you were throwing on?
I was using a 13G at that time, which is...
That's a bigger one.
Yeah, it's not the biggest, but it is big. It's a three-hook model and long cast, but all of them work. I mean, they from 2 inches to 10 inches, all of them work. So,
Were you able to get away with a bait caster there, or are you using a spinning rod?
No, I was using a bait caster,
and
I was using, I always use a floating line if I'm trying to keep the bait up. If I'm trying to get it down, then I go to fluorocarbon. But in that particular instance, I was using monofilament.
Mono.
Did I see you, now maybe you don't want people to know this, but did I see you messing with that bait at that tournament a little bit?
I don't recall anything.
You didn't add nothing to it?
I don't think I, maybe suspend dots, maybe at
See,
the time.
You
yeah.
did. I know. I'm a bass.
You knew
I'm a bass.
Well, I'm not trying to. It's a long time. I'm old.
Yeah. You're a legend, bro.
Half my brain's gone, so you have to remind me of things these days. But you know, basically, if I was doing anything, it would probably suspend dots.
And
I used to put a little bit of red on them, but I don't think I did in that situation.
You did what I remember, and I was setting you up. But anyway, I remember you adding the suspend dots, and what I remember is I think it might have been not necessarily for that suspending, but maybe just adding a little more weight to your bait. Is that an accurate statement, or were you using it to suspend?
What I was trying to achieve there wasn't length of cast so much. I was able to get the bait out there even without the suspend dots. But what really I was trying to do is slow the float coming back up.
Gotcha.
When I twitched the bait down, I wanted it to come up slower because the water was cold. We had a cold front come through in that tournament, about like they're dealing with here, only we were in Okeechobee, so it wasn't quite as impactful. But, there's times when you want that bait to dance, you know, go down and pop right back up, and that's a lot of its appeal. But in that tournament, I was wanting it to go down and then float up slower.
Gotcha. Okay.
So,
is it a dramatic retrieve? Or are you like a
no? It's
bip bip bip. Or are you just
no?
Working,
it's super.
Working it more like a surface lure.
When I'm dealing with Florida strain bass, it's always super slow. Just
that's
you know,
something.
Real lots of patience.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a lure that you're going to throw out there and work aggressively most of the time.
Yep.
For Florida strain, you. In fact, most of my strikes came when the lure was sitting dead still in the water, or after it sat for a while and I just began to move it again, they'd drill it.
Oh wow,
yeah.
That's a cool strike.
Yeah.
I've never experienced that one.
Yeah.
Usually, I've had them, you know, where you're jerking it and pausing it, they'll eat it.
Yep.
They'll eat it on the surface, but when you're pulling it down off the surface, that's a unique strike.
Yeah, my advice to any beginner that's unfamiliar with a bait, or even an advanced angler doesn't use it a whole lot, I would throw it out there and let the rings dissipate and then twitch it. Just kind of take your time. Let the first fish show you what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And they will. And usually, once you figure that out, you can catch a lot more.
Right.
Yep.
Did you do anything with the hooks? Do you care, stock hooks? Do you change them out?
No, they come with VMC vanadium steel hooks now, mm-hmm. and they're just great hooks.
All
now,
right.
Back then, they were a different hook, and I did change them. But nowadays, right out of the package.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, that bait is a great bait. We've all had amazing stories. Now, you talked about how they used it, weighted it, you know, out in the White River lakes, getting things to suspend.
Mm-hmm.
It really created an evolution of
new
of these baits.
And
so what happened next? We've got a few here that maybe we can look at that look like they're the next series.
Science.
Yeah, before we get there, I mean, basically the original floater went through its own evolution and continued to be a balsa bait. They came with a jointed version. They came with a countdown, which the first sinking, slow sinking.
That's a good cold water bait, too, especially in the north.
It is. It really is. And so that was the first steps to, you know, progress for the jerk bait as we know it. And then eventually the Husky jerk came. And basically this is a plastic version of the original floater. And this is a small two-hook version. They come a lot bigger, and it's a killer in itself. It's it's of those reflective, flashier, rattling type baits. This bait's got a rattle in it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they can hear that. If I stop hitting the mic, they might. it had a specific action. It was very similar to the floater, but obviously not buoyant. It was a suspending bait. And then in more recent times, we have the X-Wrap, and that carved a niche for itself in a lot of different, angling circles, saltwater even. You know, a lot of guys use the X-Wrap in saltwater.
We call that the Al Linder, where we come from.
The Al Linder? Yeah. Right. Well, that's a killer bait still. And then now
never
we
comes
got,
off his rod.
Yeah,
that's right.
So we got the Shadow Wrap now. They've continued to evolve the line. And jerk baits are a big deal, especially this time of year.
Right, right.
So, yeah, it's jerk bait season in a lot of places, from Florida to the Midwest.
I think it might have been a jerkbait season here had we not gotten all that rain.
Yeah, that dirty water.
I agree with that 100%. Yeah,
we happened to be at Lake Guntersville for the 2020 Bassmaster Classic, and we had a lot of rain, inches of rain, and it stained the water. That's important to talk about when it comes to jerkbait fishing. That is an adjustment that we have to recognize as anglers, that when that water color changes, this bite kind of goes away.
Yeah, it can. There's times when if you could still have maybe a foot of clarity, you can still make a jerkbait work, but you got to be slow and you got to be in the strike zone.
Yep.
And lots of patience. I mean, there's times when you jerk it down, you just leave it for 30 seconds, suspended.
That's so hard.
It is. It's really hard. I'll tell you an example. Mark Menendez won on Pickwick. Actually, I think he was on Wilson. I think he locked up.
That's right. Yep.
And he said he'd throw it out there, jerk it down, and just... You could smoke a cigarette by the time you got a bite.
Yep.
Don't smoke cigarettes, but but anyway, it was a like a glacial speed presentation, and
that's hard to do.
He won the tournament. Yeah. So.
Yeah, I remember here on Lake Guntersville, George Cochran won on a jerkbait.
The famous Strike King jerkbait, actually.
Yes.
Yeah. Infamous, maybe.
I think he won in the creek they're taking off from, actually.
Yes.
I think he did.
Yeah,
exactly. You're right, Bern.
It's really close. Yep. I remember him dancing when he would catch a 5-pounder.
That was neat to see the jerkbait used in that instance. And you kind of talked about the evolution, guys, too, and into the Husky jerk. And I just wanted to make note that, especially on Okeechobee, I think you kind of started a trend towards, are brought to attention more towards jerkbait fishing.
In Florida,
and on Okeechobee. Even look at Steve Daniels.
Yep.
He embraced this Husky jerk lure.
He really did.
And used that slow pause method with the Husky jerk.
He did, yeah.
In the boat lanes, like similar.
Yep. Yeah. That's a good pattern.
It's just the evolution of a simple piece of balsa into fish catching magic is what the mystic nature is.
It's spread throughout Florida. I mean, you can catch them in the canal systems of just about any lake in Florida is good. You got the water clarity usually, and the St. John's become a good jerkbait habitat for guys that know where to throw it. A lot of lakes and the Kissimmee chain is really good for jerkbait fishing. So.
Talk to me about other lakes that you've used this floating minnow to great success, other than Florida lakes. Have you been successful up north for smallmouth or any of that?
A little bit
kind of stuff?
On smallmouth, yeah. Usually when they're eating that, they're eating a lot of other baits too. But I can tell you in the Carolinas, it's been really good. And on Lake Lanier, I had a really good tournament one time for spotted bass. They were shallow, and a lot of guys were using floating worms, and I was getting plenty of bites doing that also, but I just tried something different and I felt like I was catching bigger fish.
Okay.
So yeah, it works in other places. The Carolinas, it's really good. It's basic bank fishing. I mean, it's like bank fishing 101.
Right.
Just throw it out there and twitch it and let it float up, and sometimes they want it quick, usually they don't. And if it's a tough bite, I always try it.
Right.
Yes, sir.
Well, I guess I'm going to add it to my tournament tackle
box. You better. Now, here's something crazy. Now, I tell me if you ever did this. And this, to me, is off the wall. Like, I would never do this. But I remember reading articles in Fisherman years ago about Carolina rigging floating Rapalas.
Never heard of that in my lifetime.
So in other words, they would.
I get it.
I mean, and they were wrecking them on it.
Really?
Yeah, and that was up in the Minnesota area, of course.
Trying to see that going out there as you cast it.
It's got to be a gosh awful mess burn.
I'm trying to picture that.
But I mean, they did it.
Yeah.
As stupid as that did sound, it really is true. I mean,
yeah, that's good. Well, they've Carolina rig crankbaits. I personally like the Carolina rig Azera Spook.
That's your favorite. Yeah, the underwater action is how you wake it is amazing, people.
it's a strong technique. Well, you're out on tour as usual. What's next for the elites? What's next for you?
I'm hanging in there. I mean, as my sponsors still support me, and I still enjoy it. I feel healthier when I'm on tour than I do when I'm sitting home. And as long as I feel like I'm, you know, competitive, I'm going to stay out there. It's been tough. I missed the AOI championship last year by 2 points, and that was one spot. I was 51st. That was pretty painful. But I don't know. I just the lakes still give me, you know, they're challenging, and they still motivate me to try. And the competition's better than ever. These young guys are just insanely talented. They come. I got on tour, maybe like yourself, back in the day. I got on tour to learn more about fishing. I mean, I learned so much on tour. These guys come with a full book of skills.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
They're good to go.
The whole left side of their brain.
Yeah, that's right.
the technology that they use, they come out armed with that. Using, you know, the 360 and all the various, you know, down scans. And
they do.
It's amazing to see those young anglers and having to compete with them. I see them. Jacob Wheeler comes to mind. I watch him practice in some of the opens that I fish, and he hardly makes a cast. Just spends all his time on the sonar.
Yeah, that's a lot of them do that now. I mean, back in our day, it was a flasher.
Yeah, or a spoon plug.
It was. Yeah, fine bottom with your lure, you learn to triangulate from objects on the shoreline to get back to your spot. We didn't have GPS. We had. Once I was fishing for a little while, we had Loran, but that wasn't reliable because the government would scramble. Scramble the signal, so you could be 20 yards from your key spot and not know it. But it was a different world back then, and I kind of like that, the challenge that we had back then in that regard. I think it's in some ways a little too easy these days to pinpoint key structural spots.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's... That's an old guy with sour grays. Probably.
Yeah. Well, you know, to spin that around, you see guys like John Cox, who fishes most of his day without the sonar on.
Exactly.
Yeah. And he's going on the bank. And I've heard Greg Hackney, who speaks for Bass U, talk about the bank fishing has never had less fishing pressure.
There's a lot of truth to
the technology.
I love it.
There's a lot of truth to that, really.
Yeah. Not as many guys on the bank.
Yeah. I'm sponsored by Garmin, and I love the technology. I like what I see. The Panoptix is just crazy.
Yeah,
you
see, that's nuts.
See fish swimming. Mm-hmm. You actually see their tails wagging 30 yards out, and you can throw your lure out there, and when it sinks, it looks like a little meteor. And it's just bizarre, but, at some point, you know, I don't know. You have to kind of draw the line. I don't know when.
Yeah, well, see what kind of fishermen – you got to fish to your strengths.
Yeah.
You know, and you got to use different strategies, and the sonar technology has definitely benefited the kids because, man, they grew up since 6 years old on their phones, and I know my son is crazy with the technology. So if he decides to fish, he's gonna be teaching me.
Oh yeah, he'll show you, Pete. Yeah. I know Jake's got you covered.
but I love it. So where's your next tournament?
We go to Chickamauga, and it's a week after this event here, and it actually was postponed. It was a back-to-back deal.
That's
at
right.
The beginning of the season.
Because of the Minnesota.
Yeah, and the flood, basically, I think the Corps shut it down, said you're not using the waterway at this time. And for me, it was a relief because I did not get off to a good start at the St. John's. We were looking at low temperatures in the 20s, highs in the 40s with rain all that week.
That's right, yep.
And thank God.
That was a tough tournament.
Yeah.
Well, I'm saying the Chickamauga, the projection for Chickamauga was going to be 20s and 40s high and rain. So they basically postponed it, and now we're looking at the third week of March, and it should be really good.
Right. And that's great that you guys got better conditions, and I'm really mad at Bassmasters for changing their dates because it stepped right on one of our Bass University events in Minnesota.
It did.
Minnesota.
So that's why I was saying
Minnesota.
Yeah. So I'd
appreciate a courtesy call before you're planning on changing dates next time. Bassmasters, please. But we'll look forward to being in Minnesota. Hopefully next year we're working on the restart. scheduling that. But Bernie, I want to thank you for taking the time to come and see us and dropping some of this old school knowledge on us.
Man, I love you guys. Anytime you can call me, you know that.
Dude, yeah. Thanks, dude.
We'll be rooting for you out on tour.
All right,
hell
brother.
Yeah.
All awesome. Right, thank you.
It's
appreciate
great seeing
it.
You.
It's Bernie Schultz right there.
Pat Renwick, I'm Pete Kluzek for Bash University TV.
Thank you.